This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, one with Ford. Great choice. And not only a great choice, a dealership as well. Treated Stanger did a great job of taking care of everything. Financing outstanding. Worked with me and made it happen. They'll do the same for you. And an outstanding service department that backs it up every step of the way. Inspections, routine, difficult to handle it all. Plus a lot of great pre-owned inventory that they go over with a fine-tooth comb with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online, sunburymotors.com. Always allowing us to tap into that outstanding mind of his and give us his insight is Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Absolutely. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Interesting weekend where Chris Boswell kicks six field goals, and Jake Moody kicked six field goals last night. You know, it takes three field goals to beat a touchdown. And in the Falcons game, there was one touchdown. Atlanta scored it. In the Jets game, they had three touchdowns to the Niners, two, yet each time six field goals won it. Is there after week one, we have to wait for a trend to happen. Was that too many field goals being kicked and not enough finishing of drives?
I think you can look at the fact, too, you had, I believe I saw this, up until last night's game, there had never been two kickers with multiple 50-plus yard field goals in week one of the NFL. Kind of to your point, I'm not sure if that's a trend or not, but you have to pay attention to the fact that what that really means is at least one of the teams that kicked six field goals, two of them had to be pretty significant. In fact, I think in the Steelers' case, a couple of them were significantly long. They got in the red zone once, and they challenged the end zone quite a bit. And across the league, I think you can correlate that, if not directly, I think anecdotally, to the fact that passing yardage was way down, significantly down from what we've seen in the past. Now, is that a defensive improvement? Is it a regression at quarterback? You don't typically see Sam Darnold play a good game. He did, and a lot of other guys maybe didn't by the standard that you'd normally measure a quarterback. If that is kind of the barometer of your offense, which I think it's fair to say it is, assuming the game isn't a blowout, I think overall you're looking at a first weekend of kind of a slagging offense in comparison to what we've seen in the past. Now, again, I think the main question, and this is something to look at entering week two, on the league level, is it a defensive year? Is it the defense has caught up to some degree, combined with the possibility that offense has just dropped off a bit from where it was? It will be, I think, intriguing to see how this continues, and field goals are certainly a part of it. But I think it's an overall function of the offense how drives are finishing. You know, because you remember that Falcons game, there were very few punts. I think there were only three overall, and one of them probably shouldn't have even. Well, one of them didn't count. The kicker got killed to no penalty at all.
Right.
During the play, but overall they didn't punt the ball a whole lot. You know, they possessed it fairly well. The Falcons gave it up a little bit, but the Steelers held on to it. Just they didn't score much. They had long drives that ended in field goals pretty much the entire day. But they didn't get close enough. So it was like, you know, just a little bit of offense, but not a whole lot. And if anything, to summarize, the rest of the league kind of looked like the Steelers' offense has the last couple of years. Yeah. So maybe the Steelers were on the cutting edge of all of this. Who knows?
Which that brings us to the next question. Normally, early, defenses are ahead of offense. But normally that happens in the preseason where you null these things out. Very few starters are playing in the preseason any longer. Thus, are we seeing the trend of defense ahead of offense early because offenses haven't been out there in the preseason actually playing?
I think you have to look at that as a factor. I forget who said it, but somebody had made mention of a pretty poor offensive game going on, making kind of the snide comment that, don't tell me preseason doesn't matter. You know, it's not as if these guys don't need reps together. And oftentimes coaches will say, we're doing it in practice. That's how we're working it. It doesn't seem to look like that, as Mike Tomlin would say, under the stadium lights. The first half for Pittsburgh, for example, was horrendously bad. I think a lot of things went wrong with the Jets last night. I think you saw four quarters of futility out of the Cleveland Browns. These were teams that it seemed more like they put their offense together that morning before the game, let alone weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So I think they probably would be wise to figure out a way to recreate more realistic conditions than they're in, and perhaps they don't look like they're completely lost, like the teams that I just mentioned did early and throughout the game oftentimes. They need to find some type of, if they don't want to play guys in preseason, I get that. They have to do something, though, and I understand injury is a risk. This is not a risk-free game. It's not a pain-free game. Guys are going to get hurt. I don't know how much better off you are to have to play your players through four quarters in a game like I saw Cleveland and Dallas play yesterday. Cleveland was taking on plenty of injury risk along with other things during that game, so to suggest that they didn't need that time in the preseason to work on a few things now looks pretty stupid. And usually, in retrospect, that's where we're making that judgment. But to the overall point here, very few offenses looked really good, in my opinion, from the games that I saw. There were a lot of mental mistakes, a lot of operational mistakes, stupid penalties, things like that, that you would think would be ironed out with that much time to practice and prep these plays leading into week one. It's just not what we got overall.
Now we get to the kickoff part of it. We see it now with practical application in game after game. It's only 1 week as a sample size, but more and more touchbacks were happening. What is your view on what the NFL is attempting to do with this, and is it a rule that you think has a chance to survive?
Yeah, you remember how excited I was about this back in the day, how I thought week one was just going to be this bonanza of kick returns?
Yeah.
No, they just put the ball through the end zone like they have been for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
If they don't want it, they're not going to use it. And that's, by and large, what we saw. I like to think that maybe they recognize that this is a marathon, not a sprint, and this can be something you weaponize later in the year. Maybe when it's a little bit harder to kick all the way through the end zone, you can set up, you know, better coverage when you have a better sense of what a team wants to do with the ball. And in turn, kick return teams aren't really doing anything special with it. They don't get much of a chance to return, so nobody's really putting anything down on film to get a sense of how they're approaching it, or if they view the situation being any different than a regular return. I didn't see a whole lot that looked all that different. Just very few opportunities, but that's not different from what we've seen, really. I'll say this, from a TV perspective, it looks really bad to know the ball is in the air and literally no players are moving.
Right.
That looks odd, especially when you can just tell through experience in the camera angle that the ball is landing at least in that paint, if not the stadium, the stands. They're not going to return that. You know it, and you know probably the players do as well, but it seems problematic that with this the players don't even move at all. It's a bad look, and I think unless they move the spot of the ball back or up for a touchback, I don't, you know, they're going to continue doing what they're doing logically. from what we've seen to this point. I hoped it would be more. I think there is a lot that you could do with it. But after 1 week, we saw definitively around the league, nobody really wants returns still. So I don't know. I hope for more. I think it can be something they weaponize maybe a little bit later on in the season when they've had a little bit more to look at. But I wouldn't expect it to be any different next week.
Which now brings us to the next part. Denver's coming up. It is not going to be Russell Wilson. It's going to be, again, Justin Fields. What did you think of the Fields performance in the opener against Atlanta?
Tale of two halves for Fields, for sure. The first half was, I think, fairly and reasonably bad. He did not operate well, did not command the offense for much of anything. More than a few, I saw opportunities that he could have taken and should have taken and didn't. To the offense's credit, and I would say, not to suggest that Justin Fields is not a part of this, but I think Steelers fans can look at what Arthur Smith did with the offense in the second half compared to the first and be optimistic over the idea that they saw things that they could do and modified their approach a little bit. We saw Fields rolling out from under center a lot more often in the second half. It seemed like that gave him a little bit more time to survey the field, to see what's going on, and deliver a ball, usually on target. He made some nice throws. The phantom offensive pass interference on George Pickens, that was a well-thrown ball, right where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. He made some good plays. And on top of that, he didn't make any mistakes that were readily obvious. You know, I felt like he threw where the ball needed to go far more often in the second half than he did in the first. And sometimes things got busted up a little bit. I'm not trying to rag on the officiating too much, but critical play late. I think it was a second down. They needed to run the clock. They had a screen call for Jaylen Warren. Warren was clearly held by the defensive lineman. I don't know how they didn't see that. Fields had the opportunity to run. Instead, he threw it down into the ground. That might have been one he would probably want to, you know, a sack in that situation isn't too bad considering they're trying to drain the clock. That's something he probably could have done better with, but that's not a huge deal. Overall, the offense played a lot better. I really thought at the end they were going to be able to put something together. Still stalled out. I'd probably give Fields a C-plus overall in the game. Really bad start, but he rebounded well. You know, I give him credit for that. Not a perfect game by any stretch. There's still a lot of things offensively they're going to need to address, in particular the fact they have basically one wide receiver and a collection of running backs and tight ends, players that aren't going. They're not challenging much down the field outside of Pickens, and they're not making any plays after the catch at all. Some of that is on the quarterback for not delivering accurate passes. Some of it is they're not putting them in a great opportunity to do it, and some of it is, you know, they didn't run the ball particularly well to set up other stuff. But the second half was definitely a lot better than the first. Just needed to finish a little bit more. I think some of that is on the quarterback, but overall, Fields played a pretty good game. You can't be too upset with that.
T.J. Watt and Boswell probably should have had first-class seats on the way home. A lot of other people should have been in coach. When you look at Watt, we've talked about him so many times, his impact on the game, even when he's not making plays, is really something else. Your thoughts on him and the domino effect of having him out there and what it does for other players?
I think the domino effect of him being out there, it's intimidating enough, even to the point where the officials can't believe what he just did. They're allegedly, the official told T.J. Watt after the game on the Phantom neutral zone infraction that he didn't commit, that he made a mistake. Right away he admitted to that. That's what Watt does, though. That's the impact that Watt has. The right tackle couldn't even move a little bit early and get in front of him. The tight end who's on the line and supposed to chip Watt on his way out can't even move to get to him fast enough. That might have been the best game I've seen T.J. Watt play, but I think the most telling thing about Watt at this point in his career is the fact that I'm not even sure, because he keeps raising the bar each game. I've said for a while now, you know, just to point it out, pass rushers, edge rushers in the NFL don't tend to play more and better football when they reach, you know, 8,000 snaps in their career, when they reach the 30-year mark. Watt might be better now than he was. And yesterday proved it. He completely and totally dominated that game. Did you notice that the last completion the Falcons had, they're down 8 points. They need, what, 70 yards to tie the game. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins has played more football than most guys in the league. He knows what he's doing. He takes the ball. He gets the snap out of shotgun. He sees Watt, looks right at Watt, and gets rid of the ball on a 7-yard out in which the guy didn't have time to break close enough to the sideline. He makes the catch and gets tackled inbounds. Cousins is walking off the field as soon as he caught the ball. He knew the game was over. He was done.
Right.
Cousins wanted nothing to do with T.J. Watt anymore after that.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I can say this from being around a lot of Vikings fans here, Cousins is kind of known for that a little bit. And on the other, I don't blame him because Watt was all over him like a cheap suit the entire game. I don't think he had anything left but a turnover. He took a completion. They weren't even going to challenge to go down the field because they had no chance of protecting him against Watt, who didn't look tired at all. So a tremendous game from T.J. Watt, punctuated by one of the more telling white flag waving moments you'll see in the NFL. Cousins was done. He was out. As a Steelers fan, it's fun to watch, but just as a purist of the game, you shake your head and you see this is the kind of impact Hall of Fame players make on a game in their career. And that's the level that Watt was at on Sunday.
So that brings up the next part. Kirk Cousins' first game back from an Achilles. Aaron Rodgers' first game back from an Achilles. Did you see similarities as to how the two played coming off a similar injury?
I think it's funny that you ask that. I think a lot of quarterbacks looked almost like they were coming off injury. It didn't really seem like a whole lot of them cut loose, you know? Maybe that's a more of a matter of where they were deciding to throw the ball. You know, it's commonly said that quarterbacks only, you know, they throw to this guy, therefore it's the play design. That's the way the play was set up. It's supposed to go to this one player at this depth. It's usually not the case. You know, they're looking for a primary on a route. It might be deeper down the field. That didn't materialize. They throw to somebody who's open. You know, it's pretty logical. It's pretty simple. It really didn't seem like quarterbacks took a whole lot of chances. In reference to Cousins, his interceptions, probably not. You know, something happened on each of them. I don't know if that's a mistake on the quarterback or the receiver. Something got mixed up, and the defensive player made a play on the ball. As far as Rodgers went, I feel like there was a sense of hesitancy in what he was doing, and I almost think that's by the Jets' design. I don't know how much they want to drop him back and let him play like Rodgers used to play. I think they wanted to kind of keep it makeable for him right away. I think his arm is still there, accuracy-wise. I'm not sure that the strength is there, but I don't think anybody would have expected it to be that way. Still very smart. He reads the field well and put the ball where it was supposed to go. I thought he played pretty well overall. Not a winning effort by any stretch, but a lot of things went wrong with the Jets offense. Clearly not in sync with what they're doing and playing a very good opponent on the road in a pretty hostile environment. You know, the Steelers played in San Francisco last year and looked a lot worse than the Jets did last night, and the Jets weren't very good. So there's still some room to grow there. As far as Cousins goes, though, if that's the best you're going to get, then, you know, we need to take a lot of things back about them drafting Michael Penix, because Cousins is done. That was really not a good performance from him at all.
Right.
You know, something called Ray McLeod should not be getting 7 targets over Drake London in his 3 or whatever it is that he got. That can't happen if you're going to compete this season. That's your home opener. That's usually pretty heavily favored for the home team. And offensively, they did absolutely nothing in the second half. And a lot of that, in my opinion, was on the quarterback, who was worried about where he was going with the ball from the second that he got it, because he was looking off to his right shoulder to see where Watt was.
Well, that brings us to the next one, because Denver's next. And I don't see how you can attempt 42 passes in a game and get 137 yards total. But that's what Bo Nix had in the opener against Denver. To me, those are stunning numbers. I mean, when you're averaging 3 yards an attempt, I mean, you might as well be going backwards.
I remember way back in the day, I don't think it was against the Steelers, but I remember a Joe Flacco game, post-contract extension Joe Flacco, where he had something like 40 attempts for something like 120 yards. And it was just a maddeningly infuriating game to watch. It was like if you did nothing but run the ball, but you stopped the clock after it. It was that kind of a game. Really long, really drawn out. And Bo Nix played far worse than Joe Flacco did that day. So it's not to try to one-up Sean Payton, but as one of the more intentionally unlikable coaches in the NFL, to hear everything he said to prop Bo Nix up, and then to watch his performance yesterday on Sunday, it really shows how much Payton is trying to sell people on Nix. But the way he played, if there truly was a quarterback controversy in Denver during camp, they need to make a change real quick, because he looked terrible. Really not prepared, made a lot of bad decisions, and couldn't go anywhere with the ball. I mean, offensively, they're in trouble. You know, you can't blame Russell Wilson anymore. That was worse than any game Wilson played. So Pittsburgh definitely has an opportunity, and I would imagine, just a hunch between me, you, and the audience, Denver's going to want to run the ball quite a bit. You do not want this Steelers pass rush getting to your rookie quarterback. He's going to turn it over 3 times by halftime if that's the case, and they don't have a chance. So it's a very much a bad matchup, I think, for Denver in this one, and it's a good opportunity for Pittsburgh to get right against the run. I thought they had some problems there, but I don't think they're going to worry a whole lot about what Bo Nix can do down the field.
My friend, always a pleasure as we seamlessly go from topic to topic. You are the best. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong, this half hour brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, you'll be busting through the snow this winter with these incredible all-wheel drive savings. Lease a third-row seat all-wheel drive Santa Fe for only $450 a month for 36 months. Choose a 2024 all-wheel drive Sonata for only $29,674. Or a 2025 all-wheel drive Kona for just $28,968. Looking for a compact truck? Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 Santa Cruzes in stock with savings up to $1,774. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000 miles. We're not done. Lease an 80 MPG Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid for only $465 a month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors has 53 Tucsons available. Hard to believe it, but winter is just around the corner, and now is the time to save big money on your next new all-wheel drive Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
36-month leases are 10,000 miles a year with $4,000 down. See dealer for details.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, light, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. They'll do everything they can to save you money while making sure you're fully insured. because that's what people who deeply believe in customer service do, and that's Purdy Insurance. Marcus Tree and Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. All right. Well, we've already gone after the greed portion of the show. That, you know, that to me is almost... is it stunning? No, but... after a while, you're like, what are we doing here? That's... whatever. After a while, I guess I'm not going to be surprised anymore as to how far people will go to feel they should get money. So, I don't know. That's just me. That's me. Niners won last night, 32-19. Aaron Rodgers looked okay, but that's how he looked. Kirk Cousins looked okay, but that's how he looked. A lot of people looked just okay in week one. Really wasn't anybody where I sat back and went, whoa, how about that? No. Really wasn't much of that in the opening week of the season.
That one throw Anthony Richardson made where he slipped.
Yeah.
But I think I agree with you guys. It's more, you know, nobody's playing in the preseason now. This is essentially some of those guys' first real action all year.
That's right. And so what we're seeing is by the end of the month, I expect the NFL to settle in. By the end of the month, I expect college football to settle in. Because now you're into a rhythm of playing games, into a rhythm of tackling, into a rhythm of the speed of the game, and so forth. So we'll do it on a week-by-week basis because that's what we have to do. But the reality is we'll get a better feel for what it really is at the end of this month. Because the way everything is structured now with, you know, of course, in college football, it's always been the same structure. No preseason scrimmages against anybody or whatever. So you just start. So that pretty much is how it goes. But the NFL, rarely are people playing in preseason games. I'm starters. And it's showing up in the early games. And, of course, you are now in a situation where even fans expect guys to be bubble wrapped. Oh, don't play him. He might get hurt. Like, oh, for goodness sakes. Really? It could happen. Right? He also could slip and fall in the shower and get hurt. I mean, should he not shower? Well, wait. No, enough of the suits mantra. Oh, I thought that was a good, like, little side.
That's why he doesn't leave the house either.
You know, management was wondering about that. All right, so that's where we are. I think I mentioned earlier about waiting for the basketball schedule to come out, which then, of course, I already talked yesterday about the absurdity of the football schedule. I mean, how do you go into a season, into a whole season, and have two of your 10 kickoffs? I mean, two of your 12 kickoffs known, the other 10 you don't know. How do we do this? Now, basketball, it takes a little while, especially with 18 schools. I can understand the ability to try and figure out who's on BTN, who's on Fox, who's on Fox Sports 1, who's on Peacock, who's, you know, I understand all that. And trying to put together this board so everybody knows where they're going to be, because the difference between football and basketball is basketball, except for one flex, everything's set. And I don't understand why, when these things are negotiated, that in football, you can't look at everybody and say, look, we'll give you November the ability to flex a couple of games, But let's just settle in now as to who's playing who and what time. That way we know. It's one thing I always respected about the Notre Dame TV deal. They locked in their home kickoff times. Locked them in. Their fans know when their games kick off. I mean, you know, we need to be more fan-friendly in what we do. Everybody's desperate for ratings and so forth. Well, you can be desperate for ratings, but like, how about like letting somebody know when the game is? You know, basketball, when the schedule's out, and I think it's out this week. Like before the week's out. We'll see. By the way, see the new Penn State basketball court?
I did not.
I love what they did with it. I have quietly, now people have changed over time, I've quietly advocated for what this court looks like for a long time. Because, look, I've gone to Illinois, Ohio State, Nebraska, and so forth, okay? And they all have in Indiana outlines of the state on the floor. Penn State is the state university of this commonwealth. And I said, why don't you guys put an outline of the state on the floor and throw the logo in the middle of it? Right, this is a long time ago, Todd. Long time ago. I haven't brought it up recently because after a while I just feel like you're banging your head against the wall. But I brought it up to a lot of people over the years. I don't understand why we don't do that. And I said, and I usually get mumbo jumbo answers, whatever. And, I sit there and go, okay, fine. It's like, in other words, you have no idea why. I got it. I saw the pictures of the court because I haven't been in the Jordan Center. Well, I was probably in there a couple weeks ago, but the court wasn't out there. And they've got an outline of the state, an outline of the state with the Lion logo in the middle. It looks terrific. It's going to look great on TV. Now, gone is the we are part that's out there, but I'd rather have, no offense, I'd rather have the state outline out there. That's me. Other people may disagree with that, but I'd rather have this. It looks really good.
Is the Nittany Lion in the right spot for the central part of the state for a state
you
college?
You got it. It's right in the middle. Right in the middle. It looks like it's just a slightly west of Aaronsburg. And Aaronsburg, for people that don't know, is the geographic center of the state. But I thought it looked sharp. It's the way I hoped it would look. Subtle, but effective. Liked it a lot. Now we have to get a schedule. Hopefully that'll be coming soon. Because I think that would be... that way people know what they're doing, which is great. Next up, did you see the body cam footage of the Tyreek Hill arrest?
I did.
What a mess. What a mess. On both parts. Number one, okay? Let me start with this about the police. Every time an officer is involved in any stop, they have zero idea what they're encountering. Could be completely cooperative, or it could be somebody extremely dangerous. They never know. And I always give the benefit of the doubt. Number two, Tyreek Hill was asked to roll down his window. If he does that, this doesn't happen. Number three, you don't grab him and drag him out of there. For goodness sake, what are you doing? Right? What are you doing? Tell them to either roll down the window or open the door. One of the two. Okay? But you don't drag them down. This is a traffic stop. Right? This isn't a high-speed chase through a neighborhood with a suspect that you're trying to reel in. It's a traffic stop. Now, was he wrong? Sure, he's weaving. He's going 70 miles an hour the whole day. I mean, he's, okay. But there's wrong on both sides here. There's wrong on both sides. And there will be people that discuss the fact that, you know, most of the police officers in the video, you can tell right now, are actually Hispanic. So this isn't one of those like, wow, Tyreek Hill is, you know, no. Now, the part I didn't see was the Calais Campbell part. Campbell's reputation was one of absolute and complete. Everybody, he's like one of the class acts of the league, NFL Man of the Year, the whole deal. And he was just stopping like, hey, it's my teammate. Because I'm sure he recognized the car and went, well, aren't many people down here that has one of those. It's got to be Tyreek's car. So he's stopping to see if he could defuse it, and then they're throwing cuffs on him like, oh, what are we doing here? Let's make it worse. So there's wrong on both sides. Yeah, what did you think?
I'm kind of along the same lines. I think, you know, it could have been quelled quicker from both ends.
Yes,
to make it a more comfortable, but I just don't. I mean, if you watch it, the one cop 30 seconds in realizes who it is. So I think they knew who it was pretty quickly.
Yes,
and I think his reputation precedes him a little bit too. I don't think that helps.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's kind of like the Scotty Scheffler thing. I mean, both ends have to know you're pretty close to the Dolphins, you know, the Dolphins gate. You got to know it's got to be a player. Who else would be driving a car like that? And he's got to know that, you know, he's in a pretty crowded area. He probably shouldn't be driving like that either.
Right, exactly. I mean, Hill's wrong for how he's driving based on all witnesses. Right? Hill's wrong for not rolling down his window. Now, he says, I didn't want people to see me. Well, by not rolling down his window, everybody saw him.
I was going to say, people saw you, buddy.
All right? I mean, by not rolling down his window, everybody saw him. He should have just done what he was asked to do. Right? But once he got out, they were too rough with him. Like, get down, you know, like holding him down, like, what are you doing? Just settle down here, right? And that's where they start crossing. So both sides cross lines here. And that's one of the big problems. Like, both sides cross lines. And with Calais Campbell, again, I don't know how he... I can't imagine, based on the kind of guy Campbell happens to be, that he really got out of line. I mean, Campbell's, like, considered to be, like... I mean, rock solid was created as a phrase to describe him.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, yeah, he's like rock solid on the field, rock solid off the field. And he's just doing what a leader and what a good teammate would do. He stopped to see, you know, what happened. Crazy. I am with, by the way, Neil on the Kirk Cousins thing. Man, he looked like an older guy coming off an Achilles. And I don't know. That's going to be... He's getting a lot of money, but... He didn't look smooth, polished, or anything in game one. Phillies continue to roll on, by the way. And tonight they've got the Marlins, and Ranger Suarez is back out there. This is what Suarez has done. There are a couple key stats I look at. 133 in the third, only 112 hits. Outstanding. He has a 7-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. 7-1. And I think I said the Marlins. I got the Rays tonight, I meant. I mean, he has been something else. love how he's pitched.
Scott Lauber is going to be on at 109 on Thursday, by the way.
Good. We'll talk about that because, I mean, look, Suarez has been outstanding. He missed a month, you know, the latter part of July into the first 2 or 3 weeks of August. But he's been terrific. Yeah, terrific.
I mean, if you don't lose it, that's probably the perfect time to be off. I mean, this is the perfect time of the season to get a little rest if you've been pitching all year.
Right. Yeah, and the Phillies are rolling along. They have a 7-game lead over the Mets.
Who are 10 of 11, which shows you how hot the Phils are.
Right. Well, the Phils are just a shade under 600 baseball right now. They very quietly have gotten back into the rhythm of playing really well again like they did early in the season. That's not a surprise. All right, wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You know, the Phillies, Kyle Schwarber homered again last night. Do you realize that Schwarber has hit 34 home runs this year and 17 have been at the bank and 17 have been on the road? He's got his average at 250 now. He's hitting 53 points higher than last year when he hit 197. And his on-base percentage is 30 points higher than last year. He's doing a lot of things that, I mean, again, he's always been a winning player. I mean, whether it was with Indiana, the Cubs, briefly with the Nationals, the Red Sox, he only played 40 or 50 games with the Red Sox. He was an incredible difference maker for the Red Sox. I always said it was a huge mistake that they didn't offer him a long-term contract. Always said that.
Does that man have to buy a beer or a meal in Philadelphia or Boston the rest of his life?
Schwarber?
Yeah.
Or Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot he was on that team, too.
I mean, Washington probably, they would like, nah, forget it.
But everywhere. You pay your own way.
But he is quietly having a much, much better year. Okay. Just a much better year. And there are certain guys that are, to me, quote, winning players. Is it a surprise that everywhere he's gone, except for maybe Washington, teams win? And he's a big part of the winning.
And as good as a baseball player he is, I think a lot of that's personality as well.
They say he's an incredible clubhouse guy. Wow. Ranger Suarez goes tonight, going for his 13th win of the year. We'll talk to Scott Lauber later in the week. Phillies down the stretch, back to playing some really good baseball.